KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Or Redwood City, California.
Hayward?
Near Richmond, Richmond District, kind of.
I'm from Concord.
Martinez.
Hercules.
I'm from Marina, California.
SF State.
Coming up, a new hotline to call if ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement, show up at your door.
We don't even know what's going to take to stop deportations under this new administration. But if we don't know about the deportations in real time, they're going to be disappeared.
And we explore the Trump executive order on undocumented immigrants with a lawyer for refugee rights.
That whole rhetoric of why don't people just come here legally? Well, people have a right. It is their legal right, and it's their international right to come here and seek protection.
Immigrant rights in tumultuous times. That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Events are taking place around the Bay today to observe International Women's Day. Activists called for a women's strike and a day of action. KALW's Eli Wertschafter went to San Francisco's Civic Center and filed this report.
In San Francisco this morning, hundreds of women rallied in front of City Hall. Many of them were skipping school or walking off their jobs. Christine Busenyas came with a group of her coworkers from Gray, an advertising agency. They were carrying posters that said, "The women of Gray are out of the office."
We put together a plan in action, went to our senior management, did not ask for permission, but told them, "This is what we're going to do. We hope you support us. We're going to be out. We are going to lay all the groundwork so you guys are ready to go without us, filling the void, and everything's going to be great."
Most of the protesters were wearing red. Susan Johnson wore a shirt that said "Nasty Woman," an insult that then-candidate Donald Trump gave to Hillary Clinton. Johnson says the proceeds for the shirt support Planned Parenthood. She took the day off from her job researching cancer treatments.
We all need to stand up for those who can't take the day off work and those who don't have the rights that I do, the privilege to be able to be like, "I'm going to go down and protest."
Johnson says her field is still dominated by men. She wants women to have equal representation in medicine and science.
Women, united, will never be divided.
Later in the afternoon, a group marched to the San Francisco headquarters of Immigration Customs and Enforcement to protest deportations. There's also a rally outside Oakland City Hall this evening. In San Francisco, I'm Eli Wertschafter for KALW News.
Over the Bay Area, faith groups are stepping up to counter the new directives on immigration from President Trump. Historically, immigration officers have left the grounds of churches alone. So some are joining a growing network of sanctuary churches where those at risk of deportation could stay indefinitely. Others offer support like food or references to legal aid. In San Francisco, the Catholic Diocese is also pushing hard to address the need. Two parishes say they will offer sanctuary. Others are holding Know Your Rights meetings that teach about constitutional rights. There's also another effort taking place, a phone number that people can call if immigration officers show up at their neighborhoods, homes, or work. The hotline is a collaboration between nonprofits and the San Francisco Archdiocese. It was funded by the City of San Francisco. KALW's Judy Silber has that story.
Veníamos de Sacramento y veníamos pensando en cómo sería.
The idea came to Violeta Roman on her way to a Sacramento meeting of immigration advocates. Roman is a San Francisco resident originally from Mexico, also an organizer. She was sitting in the car thinking about the very real threat of deportation when she suddenly blurted out, "What if there were an emergency hotline?"
Yo les decía como si fuera una línea del 911.
Something like 911 that you could use if ICE, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arm of Homeland Security, showed up at your door.
Un número donde pudieran hablar.
A number where you could talk to a dispatcher and say, "Immigration is here.
Aquí está en este momento migración en mi casa. ¿Qué puedo hacer?
What can I do?"
And we laughed, and then we're like, "Huh, how do you make that happen?"
Lorena Melgarejo works for the San Francisco Catholic Archdiocese, coordinating help for the immigrant community. She was Roman's companion in the car that day.
But she just said, oh, what would it be like if we actually could show up at the door when that happens?
Violeta Roman's vision was guided by personal experience. 2.5 years ago, at 5 a.m, ICE agents came to her house. They were looking for her father.
Dice mi hija que estaban tocando la puerta muy fuerte.
Roman was at work. Her daughter said the officers knocked forcefully.
Y que dijeron que era la policía, nunca dijeron que era migración.
They said they were police. Frightened, she opened the door. They handcuffed and took away Roman's father.
Y cuando pasó lo de mi papá, yo al primer lugar que corrí fue a mi iglesia.
Roman is Catholic, and she turned to the church for help. Her priest introduced her to Melgarejo. She helped find a lawyer. Church members went to court with her father. They listened to her.
Es cargar la cruz, pero no llevarla sola.
She said she's had to carry the cross, but not alone. Her father eventually gave up fighting his case and returned to Mexico. Even so, Roman feels lucky. She knows that not everyone has access to that kind of support, which is where the hotline idea came in. Turns out Melgarejo, who was there in the car, was just the person who could make it happen. In addition to her job at the Archdiocese, she does other community organizing work. She's well connected.
This reality of regular everyday people being targeted by immigration is not something that just started.
Still, she says it's a different era. After Trump's election and executive orders, the threat is higher. In San Francisco, a collaboration of nonprofits called the Immigration Legal and Education Network had already begun putting together a hotline. It connected undocumented immigrants who had been arrested by ICE with legal help. Roman and Melgarejo decided to team up with them. The nonprofits had lawyers and city government funds to pay for the hotline. The Archdiocese and its partners could help spread the word. They also began recruiting volunteers who would provide support for families and witnesses who would physically be there as ICE made its arrests.
We don't even know what's going to take to stop deportations under this new administration. But if we don't know about the deportations in real time, they're going to be disappeared.
Melgarejo says she knows this fear from the inside. Her own family lived for years in the U.S. without papers. They came from Paraguay on a temporary visa in 1993.
When many of us came to this country, we came running away from this repressive government that will knock at the door and take your dad and disappear him in the middle of the night. This is the same thing.
God of all people, stir us to holy anger over the wounds of our world.
On a rainy weekday evening, about 60 people are gathered in the vast, echoey cathedral of St. Agnes Church in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. They're here for a volunteer training. Some are church members, others not. But all are inspired to help a community vulnerable under the Trump administration. From a podium, Melgarejo asks how many people know someone who was deported in the past 8 years. Only a few hands go up.
So we're out of relationship. In a city that has a huge amount of immigrants, we don't know one another. We don't hold one another. This city is too small for us not to know what's happening to our neighbor.
This is the moment to forge community connections, she says. Then she tells them about the hotline and how the volunteer part will work. After someone calls, volunteers will go to where that person is, their home or place of work. First, they'll verify that it's not a false alarm. If they arrive after an arrest, they'll connect with the detainee's family. If ICE is still there, they'll turn into observers and videotape. Not to interfere with what's happening, but the videotapes can be used as evidence in immigration court, if necessary.
I think initially it feels scary, but I think really it's just about being there and observing.
Monica Floyd has come tonight to volunteer. She says she grew up in Oakland where some of her friends' parents lacked papers.
So I've had a few friends actually whose parents have been detained and one friend whose parents, their father was deported.
She says at that time, she didn't understand the full impact.
My response was, that's awful, but I didn't understand how long-term it was. I mean, just learning about it is important, but then also figuring out how to be part of the solution is now far more important to me.
Being part of a solution is also the intent of St. Agnes, the church where tonight's training takes place. Its congregation has few, if any, undocumented members. Even so, it has decided to take a stand against mass deportations. This is its second volunteer training. The first attracted more than 350 people. It's also declared itself a sanctuary church, willing to shelter people with final deportation orders. Natalie Terry, director of St. Agnes's Spiritual Life Center, is heading up the effort. She says the Catholic Church hasn't always done the right thing.
Because the church hasn't done, historically, a good job at responding to the cries of people on the margin. It hasn't done a good job with recognizing women's equality or women's roles in leadership. It hasn't done a good job at upholding the dignity of the LGBTQ community. And many, many other communities. Those are a few examples.
She says Christian teachings are her church's guide in helping the undocumented community.
We look to Jesus to understand who we should be in the world. It's very clear that Jesus was a friend to all, you know, open to all people. And this is really important for us to remember right now.
At the end of February, the California Catholic Conference of Bishops released a strong statement against policies that target undocumented immigrants. But individual bishops are divided on how much action to take. In San Francisco, Archbishop Salvatore Cordileone is taking a proactive stance. That includes backing churches that want to be a sanctuary space and also other types of support, like Violeta Roman's hotline idea. Sunday Mass is ending at the Cathedral of St. Mary of the Assumption, high on a hill in San Francisco's Western Addition. But today, many of the Latino congregants will not go home. Instead, they're heading downstairs for a workshop to learn about their constitutional rights. More than 200 people have crowded into the space, which is standing room only in the back. The priest, Father Arturo Albano, begins to speak.
Muy buenas tardes a todos. Soy Padre Arturo Albano, de sangre filipino, sí.
He tells the crowd while he is Filipino by blood,
pero de corazón latino.
His heart is Latino. And he has a dog from Juarez, Mexico.
Es indocumentado.
He jokes, the dog is undocumented. And now President Trump wants to arrest him.
President Trump quiere agarrarlo.
Striking a more serious tone, attorney Mark Silverman takes the pulse of the audience. He asks people to raise their hands if they have no fear about deportation. Only a few hands go up. He asks if anyone feels panic. Far more people raise their hands. Then he says something reassuring.
Pero por la mayoría de personas indocumentadas.
He says for the majority of undocumented folks, the risk of being deported is small.
Es poco. Y de ser deportados es mínimo.
They still need to be informed, know their rights, the right to stay silent if asked for papers or where they were born. He also says that if detained, they should fight in court. They may not win the case, but it will buy time, and by then, there could be a new administration.
La pregunta es esta.
An older man in the front row stands up.
¿Hay algún personal que esté listo?
He wants to know, if ICE knocks, is there someone from the Mexican consulate who will support him with legal help? Lorena Malgarejo points to a poster behind her. In large print is a number, 415-200-1548. It's the hotline, also called the San Francisco Rapid Response Network. It's been live since mid-February, and since early March, volunteers are also now responding to the calls. The older man's name is Francisco. He didn't want us to use his last name because of fears about his immigration status. He's originally from Mexico, but has lived in the United States for 17 years. He says he arrived to the meeting worried, but feels a lot better now.
Me siento alegre y contento porque tenemos un personal que los apoya a través de la iglesia.
I feel happy knowing there are people in the church who can help.
Francamente, lo que sentimos es temor.
The truth of what the undocumented community feels is terror. But after the meeting, he says he feels different.
Me siento diferente, es decir, me siento alegre por la reunión que hemos tenido.
Happy for the meeting that they've had. In a place like this, he's among friends. That's also what Violeta Roman felt when she got support after her father was detained. Now her dream of the hotline promises to help others also feel less alone. Lorena Melgarejo says it's important for the church to take an active role. In her mind, this is a spiritual crisis.
I mean, for me as a person of faith, I'm talking about something that seems immoral. And for the Catholic Church, the way that our bishops have talked about is that there is a need, there is a crisis. We need to fix the broken immigration system.
San Francisco is the first county in the Bay Area to organize a hotline like this, but Melgarejo says it won't be the last. Already, Alameda has launched a similar program, and she's working to help San Mateo, Marin, and San Jose do the same. In San Francisco, I'm Judy Silber for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. 3 of President Trump's executive orders have focused on immigrants and refugees. Perhaps the ones most talked about are the so-called Muslim ban, the infamous border wall. But immigrants' rights groups are saying we need to pay attention to that third one for, quote, enhancing public safety of the interior, which calls for stricter treatment of undocumented immigrants. Karen Musallo is a refugee lawyer. She heads the Center for Gender and Refugee Studies at UC Hastings College of the Law in San Francisco. She came in studio and I asked her why she thinks this order is problematic.
Basically, what the Trump executive order on enforcement in the interior, there no longer are enforcement priorities. Or to put it another way, every single undocumented person is an enforcement priority equally. And so what you've seen over the last couple of weeks since this has been rolled out is you have seen the arrest and detention and deportation of all kinds of individuals who really, you know, should not be a priority. So we saw the arrest of a young woman who had been a recipient, had been a dreamer, a recipient of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, who because of financial constraints had not been able to renew her DACA status in time. She went and she spoke out about her fears. Mm. She spoke publicly about her fears of deportation. She left the venue where she had spoken out and she was arrested and put in detention. When you see a young student who's causing no problems, who's, you know, maybe she was a little bit naive to think that she could exercise free speech and talk about her fears, but to see her arrested and then the ICE agents going to her home and arresting her father and her brother also. When you see mothers of U.S. citizen children being arrested, and you just see sort of this unleashing, and the expression was used by spokespeople of the administration, we're going to take the shackles off, you know, and we're just going to go willy-nilly, and we're going to arrest people. There's kind of a cruelty to that, and a lack of any policy justification. What is the policy justification for that? So that's one of the things very disturbing about the executive order is no longer do we have enforcement priorities to go against people who really, you could say there's a policy justification for it. We see something that is just indiscriminate and cruel and is causing incredible terror in the immigrant community. So children who are afraid to go to school and then come back and think their parents might have been picked up.
But this is what was promised to the base of the president, maybe a reason why many, many, many people voted
for him?
You know, it may have been a promise that he made to the base, but he now is the president for all Americans. And I think what we have to ask is, how is it in the national interest? How is it in the national interest to pursue this kind of policy?
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm speaking with Karen Musallo, professor of law at the University of California at Hastings and director of the Center for Gender and Refugee Studies. What about the basic thing that may have been said to people in this base, that these immigrants are coming in illegally? They're not coming in the right way. They're not coming in like the immigrant who applied for a visa and waited for years. They are doing something against the law, just like that basic argument.
Well, that basic argument, first let's take one of the most glaring omissions in that basic argument, is that many, many of those individuals who came in unlawfully because they were fleeing persecution. And actually, our law does recognize and accept the fact that people fleeing persecution would come in illegally. In 1980, U.S. Congress enacted a Refugee Act and explicitly said that its reason for enacting the Refugee Act was to bring the U.S. in compliance with its international obligations. That law explicitly recognizes that people would arrive at the U.S. border and be able to access a process to seek asylum. And many, many of those individuals who are arriving right now, day by day, coming from Central America, are individuals seeking asylum. They're coming from El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, which are three countries that have collectively, together, the highest homicide rate in the world of any countries not at war. In fact, the only country that has a higher per capita homicide rate than those three countries is Syria. There is zero recognition in anything that Donald Trump or anybody in his administration has said to recognize that individuals who are coming now or who may be present in the U.S. in an unlawful status are individuals who have fled persecution. So that whole rhetoric of why don't people just come here legally? Well, people have a right. It is their legal right, and it's their international right to come here and seek protection.
Is there a way to discern that? Is there a way to say this is the asylum seeker who is coming from, you know, dire circumstances, but this is the guy who just kind of wants to get into the U.S. saying he's the asylum seeker?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why we have this screening process. Somebody arrives and they have to express their fear, and then they have to establish what's called a credible fear of persecution. And so, yes, there is a screening process. And before they would be released from detention, there'd be an even more extensive inquiry into what ties do they have in the U.S.? Do they have legal representation? Where are they going to be living? You know, might they be put in one of these alternative to detention programs, which we had under prior administrations? So, yes, there is a way to screen individuals. And it is not necessary to detain them. I should mention that I was a member of a federal advisory committee under the Obama administration, lawyers, pediatricians, psychiatrists, human rights experts. Our unanimous conclusion of our committee in this report was that families and children should The detention of families and children should be the rare exception, only in extraordinary circumstances, because the damage to families and children to jail them is just so egregious that this should not be a policy.
Is that happening now?
That's exactly what's happening now, and that's exactly what will expand even to even more extreme measures.
Karen Musallo is a refugee lawyer and heads the Center for Gender and Refugee Studies at UC Hastings College of the Law in San Francisco. And that's it for Cross Currents. Our team today includes Lila Dane, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Jeremy Ju, Jürgen Klemm, Lisa Morehouse, Ted Muldoon, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Chris Hoff, Carrie Spivak, and Andrew Stelzer. The show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Ruth Gerson. The Ruth Gerson Band plays the Club Fox in Redwood City on Saturday night. Doors open at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Oh, if you were mine, I'd never let you falter. No one would hear you crying if you were mine. I'd never let you suffer.